Okay, we'll open the Senate Labor and Commerce.
Hey, hello there, John.
We have a quorum established here, Senator Sackett, Senator Lyce, and Senator Ray, Senator Jarrock here. And we have, committee substitute for House Bill 562. There was one there that was introduced this morning, or, excuse me, received this morning here. It's an act relating to the adoption of bylaws by a cooperative, House Bill 562. And is there anybody here to testify on behalf of House Bill 562?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jack Goddard. I'm a native representative Schultz, who's unable to testify at this time. I just wanted to explain a little bit about the bill. The purpose of the bill is to return the cooperative, the bar cooperatives back to a more democratic and equal basis for deciding changing of bylaws or company policy. At the present time, under the delegate system, one delegate is elected for every 10 members of the, or every 100 members of the membership. A total of 10 delegates can make policy or change bylaws or even move a business from one committee to another. This bill would correct that and put it back to what it was in the first place, where the membership has to have a quorum. The quorum is 88 people in the case of this cooperative, the Copper Valley Cooperative, and they would make the changes, and it would be a lot more representative system than what we have now.
Any questions? Thank you. Mr. Hutchins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dave Hutchins, Executive Director of the Alaska Rural Electric Co-op Association, and our association does support the legislation to correct a problem in one of our members. We have no doubt that the membership of that cooperative would, in fact, adopt a bylaws amendment to resolve the problem if they had the power to do so. But the way the bylaws are now, the delegates have sole jurisdiction over changing the bylaws, and so we would urge the adoption of the legislation.
Okay, how does this work here with the cooperatives having three or more districts that are not connected by the road system?
That's a provision in there, Mr. Chairman, for cooperatives like Alaska Village Electric Co-op that are widely scattered over areas where it's not feasible for them to have actual membership meetings and need to retain a delegate system.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you.
Was there anyone else here to testify on behalf of the House Bill number 562?
This takes the members out of it, and just allows the delegates to do it. Now the members can't do it; just the delegates can do it. Is that it?
Is that it?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear the senator's question.
Senator Ray.
On the change of any of the bylaws, with this proposal, it takes the membership out of the vote and just has the delegates doing it. Is that correct?
No, sir. It's the other way around. It takes the delegates out of it and puts the members in control.
Well, that isn't the way I'm reading it.
I think it referenced the members is to the board of directors. Isn't that what they mean? Members of the board.
Well, it takes members out.
In the first one, this way I read Senator Ray's interpretation. Therefore, the district delegates and cooperatives have three or more districts that are not connected.
They may
adopt amendments, etc.
If it says
Then it says...
The law says now, thereafter, the members or district delegates may or shall adopt, amend, or repeal. In other words, it's a mandatory thing that the members of the district delegates do it. But the new language, forget about the three districts, the new language just says district delegates, it's permissive, they may, and it may or may not.
Mr. Chairman, it sets up two procedures here, depending on the kind of cooperative. In the first case, the language there where you see the members or is stricken, and the new language following it on lines 13 and through 15. For the systems that are where they have the districts not connected by a road system, they may either use mail ballot membership meeting or delegate system. Down on the language on lines 18 through 22, for all other co-ops that can have a meeting, they must use either mail ballot or membership meetings to amend bylaws.
So you have a two-tier system.
Yeah.
Would you repeat that, please?
Governor's office called them. It was a major earthquake in ADAC, and they're evacuating the low-lying areas in Dutch Harbor. Tom's got more information. I just told you.
Who was that, Tom? Would you give us the announcement, please? We'll continue.
So I think just to conclude that thought there, Mr. Chairman, is just that you have the two systems, one for only a very few co-ops like AVEX that are scattered over wide areas where they can't really have meetings of the membership, and the other is for everybody else, that the members would control the board of directors, would control the adoption of bylaws.
I don't know anything about it. I just want to. Why would you want to do that?
They have had a problem in Copper Valley of certain delegates trying to control the bylaws for their own purposes.
Was there any more testimony on committee substitute for House Bill 562? Okay, with no testimony indicated here, we'll close the public hearing. What are the wishes of the committee?
Move it with individual recommendations.
Any objection? Okay, this bill then goes on to rules. Committee substitute for House Bill 68, rules. There's a bill that we had up yesterday discussing the motor vehicle liability policy. Representative Schultz spoke on behalf of this. This measure expanded the two forms of motor vehicle liability insurance currently permitted. It creates a category of personal motor vehicle liability insurance. This is where the person insured would have the liability insurance on him, and he could drive other vehicles that he owns without having liability on each of the other vehicles. Is there anybody here to speak on behalf of this? Okay, since we did have a public hearing on this, no one is speaking, we'll close the public hearing on this. This bill, House Bill 68, are there any wishes from the committee?
Move it out with individual recommendations.
Any objection? Okay, committee substitute for House Bill 68, then move from the committee. Okay, another bill that we had up before us yesterday was House Bill 517, an act relating to private sale and consignment works of art. And the sponsor of the bill, Representative Grunberg, had suggested on the original bill on page 3 that we delete section C, which stated a person may not reproduce a work of art that is represented as reproduced in limited edition beyond the number of copies represented to be contained in the edition. And as a result of that, we've put together the committee substitute. Everything else in the bill is the same.
with the exception of that section that was deleted.
Where are you talking about?
On page 3, lines 20, 23 through 25, on the original bill. It's not in the committee substitute. The rest of the bill is in the committee substitute. I would need a motion for the adoption of the Senate committee substitute.
So moved.
Any objection? Okay, we have then before us the Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 517. Labor and Commerce, is there anybody here to testify on 517? Okay, hearing none, we'll close the public hearing and then any comments or recommendations from the committee?
With respect to that particular work of art, right?
Yes. Senator Ray, would you like a day to look this over?
No, I'm not interested in holding anything up. I'm just knowing somewhat about artists and artwork. I know some of the problems that arise out of it. I have a son that's an artist and a daughter who is a dealer. So I got from both sides. Very interesting.
If you'd like, we can hold it. We're working on Friday to take a look at the whole thing. Or possibly tomorrow.
No, I don't have any.
Is there a motion then to take action on the bill? Okay, hearing nothing, we'll hold the bill. Put it at the bottom of the calendar and possibly take a look at it then. Senate Bill 297, which is an act relating to the practice of naturopathy, provides for an effective date. We had discussions yesterday based on the concept of the committee substitute, and so that we would have the discussions before us, the chair would entertain a motion to have the committee substitute for the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 297 before us.
I move the substitute discussion.
Okay, for the purpose of discussion. We did have the public testimony on this the other day. Were there any questions that any of the members may have had? There was a section on the fiscal note, or a question on the fiscal note. Did the department have a position on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Nancy Dunn from the Division of Occupational Licensing. We reviewed the fiscal note and provided the committee earlier with an amended zero fiscal note for this bill.
So you did come back with a zero fiscal?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Senator Elias?
Chairman, I think there was a result of testimony yesterday. There were two areas of the bill that came under question. One was accreditation of four-year college or university. There was some discussion on that point. And also lack of any type of entry exam. As I recall, with those two provisions in place, we could license all the rejects. In other words, they could have taken the exam in Washington or Oregon or whatever state it might be, and if they failed the exam, they could come to Alaska and not take an exam and just be licensed if they fell within the criteria. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
I think that's something worth looking into.
Okay, is there somebody here to speak directly to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dr. Jasper. I practice in Anchorage, Alaska. And on behalf of the Alaska Association of Naturopathic Physicians, we would support an amendment keeping the criteria the same as it is now, but adding only the requirement that they be licensed in some other state or province, which would entail that they had taken exams, passed them, and had that license.
Senator Ray?
How did we get a chiropractor in here?
Where you at?
Page 4. Page 3.
Okay, what we were planning on doing was putting the licensure of the naturopathic practitioners under the board of the chiropractic examiners. And in order to do that, we needed to make some changes in terms of the statutes relating to chiropractors. That's why the reference was made there. I think the only problem I have with what you're saying there, Dr. Jasper, is that then we are getting close to that, very, very close to the reciprocity, which is once somebody is allowed to practice in another state or province, that would automatically allow them to practice within the state, and that was something that we wanted to avoid.
Steve?
And what I think about the title? If you check it out, let's talk about chiropractors and naturopaths at the same time.
Board of directors have no difficulty with the title that is now pertaining to naturopaths and the licensure recommended for the doctor.
The drafters looked over this very carefully.
The only thing is, I don't want it to fail because of technicality. If we're going to pass it, then if it's going to have a technical problem, is what I'm talking about.
Mr. Chairman, would you have Dr. address that provision of dealing with accredited four-year college or university?
Page 2 of the committee substitute, line 9.
Right.
Okay. My understanding of that, accredited means recognized by an accrediting agency, which is in turn recognized by the United States Department of Education, and that would refer to...
I'm not concerned with the accreditation. I'm concerned with the four-year provision. As I recall, the testimony yesterday dealt with the fact that, was it some other profession, like was medical profession, did not require a four-year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yes, it is true that the medical licensing up here does not require any specific undergraduate education. The chiropractors require 2 years, so it does vary. This is something that we've discussed with Senator Zaroff, and he feels strongly about having the four-year requirement there. And it is, I guess in effect, it is in terms of the number of years, it is a higher requirement than any of the other professions as far as the actual requirement of the law, but it is we're willing to accept it to see this problem taken care of until next session when perhaps some of these other details can be ironed out.
How many naturopaths are there now in the state?
To my understanding, there are 4 naturopathic physicians in the state. We all belong to a state association, and we all hold a license in some other state that was granted by examination. And
the question of an exam came up, and I guess this is a problem that the Board of Chiropractics may have some problem with. Is there a standard type exam there or something that could be used?
At this time, the states that license naturopathic physicians each administer their own test and grade their own test. They are now in the process of formulating a national board exam, which will be accepted by all states. That will be online this summer. I have the paperwork on that if you want to see the, they're in the process of formulating that. Next session, if we readdress this issue, we'll be able to refer to that. They have signed contracts. It's a national testing agency that administers the test for podiatrists and chiropractors and other people. I think they administer the examination for the physical therapist too, so this is what they do.
Okay. Do you actually need the passage of this legislation this year?
We do, absolutely. Dr. Pettyjohn is currently out of business. He's been out of, had to close his door some 3 weeks ago. He has 5 hungry children to feed, as well as a patient load of people that are quite upset because they're not able to get the care that they want at this time.
Again, Mr. Chairman, if you look at Section 7, we're talking about a licensure by credentials, and the only thing we're talking about is chiropractors in that particular whole section. Has nothing to do with chiropractors.
Mr. Chairman, the licensure by credentials, I took the opportunity to take this bill out as well as the existing Chiropractic Act to see how it meshed in there. And the licensure by credentials applies only to the chiropractors. The reason it's in the bill is because they had to change the wording to say that you could get a chiropractic license if you held a chiropractic license somewhere else. And that's the only reason that section is in this bill.
That's fine. The act says an act relating to the practice of naturopath and providing for an effective date. Don't say anything about chiropractic. That's what I'm trying to say. You have a dual subject.
Mm-hmm.
One law, which is unconstitutional. Okay?
I see.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, I didn't understand that that aspect of it, but the current Chiropractic Act refers to licentiates in a generic term because the chapter only deals with them. The net effect of this bill does not change anything for the chiropractic profession.
How do they talk about chiropractors and naturopaths together as a, is there a generic term that covers both of them?
Well, no, there isn't.
Is there a description that you could describe both of them?
You could say a licentiate of the chiropractic and naturopathic board. And under the original Chiropractic Act, it said a person can receive a license if they have a similar one.
I think it slides through with the other one. I'm not sure about that.
Do you think we'd have to have a title change? Huh?
I don't know. I mean, if we have to do it, it's one extra step that you can do in here. Tim Kelly can do the rules and you just have to buy it.
We could track it on the way and track that for sure.
But I would sure put something in there to have them check it out and see if there is something. If there is, because somebody's passing it, but it isn't any good.
We could send along to Hess and along with a note.
Let's do that.
Maybe you could just check it yourself.
Center license?
Well, I think Doc made a good suggestion when he said a licensing anyone, because right now, under this language, you could be rejected in other states and come to Alaska and obtain a license without an exam. So he's saying that if you had a license from another state, and they evidently all give exams, and of course we know that the person has passed an exam, but you still have to qualify under these other additional requirements. So I think that what does is tightens the bill up.
So you suggest putting in?
I would suggest
and
that they not only have 4 years of accredited college or university and a school of naturopathy. That requires 4 years of attendance at the school and a license from another state. So there's one more step in. That would be one way we'd know that they take an exam.
How about the passage of an exam in naturopathy or
basically.
Yeah, you could put that, and then if you did put that, whenever they get the national board exam, that would be included. But it would be some... If, for Senator Eliason's concern, if they did, for example, flunk the state board exam, and then maybe they would get, who knows who they would get to administer a naturopathic exam, the safest thing would be just to say a license to practice naturopathy in some other state or province of Canada. Then you know that they have taken an exam and passed it, and that would include both an oral and a written exam.
You could address the exam at a later date, at least at the close of the gate, right, at the present time, or those might be a failed exam.
Okay. Senator Ray?
Is there any history of anybody being crippled or expiring from the practice?
We've had a lot of naturopathic physicians that have worked themselves into the grave, but as far as patients that have had adverse effects.
I don't care about the doctor.
Yeah. No, sir. As a matter of fact, in the history of Alaska, there has never been a lawsuit or an official complaint filed against a naturopathic physician.
That's cool.
Okay. Any further questions?
Well, I thought there was a lawsuit. Wasn't Petty John involved in the lawsuit?
There was a suit by the medical board to stop his practice, but it was not based on an allegation of negligence or incompetence or a patient complaint. That was what I meant. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. Practice medicine without a license, right?
Yes.
Okay, this makes it pretty clear as to what can be done and what cannot be done.
Yes. The scope of practice is very clear.
Okay. We modeled it after the Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Was there anybody else testify on this? Okay, seeing and hearing none, we'll close the public testimony. What are the wishes of the committee?
Adopt the committee substitute.
Okay, we've adopted the committee substitute.
Move it out with individual recommendation.
Senator Ray, excuse me, I believe there's an amendment.
There is?
Where? Senator Eliason?
Well, on line 11, between 11 and 12 on page 2.
Move it out with individual recommendations as amended.
The amendment being that Senator Reid received a license. the amendment being that upon proof of a license issued by another state, or holding a license that's from another state, is the third edition requirement.
Okay.
Examination and license.
Well, they have to have an exam in order to get the license. So the license would indicate they're taking the exam. So we're not getting those who have failed the exam and came to last and got one without a license, without an exam. That's the only purpose.
Okay.
I move that amendment.
Any objection?
Why shouldn't an applicant be allowed to pick? Do they have a test here? Is there any test that they give them? Is there a test? Where is that guy?
Yes.
Oh, there he is.
Pardon me?
Is there a test that you have to take in order to pass this?
In all of the other states, yes. They have a test. It's administered. We have to take it, pass it. Oral and written. The state where I did it was 4 days of exams, 3 days of written, 1 day of oral.
So why should anybody be able, anybody who passed the test should be able to be licensed? College education and nothing else should be required as long as you pass the test.
Whoops.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Historically, with different professions, the board exams are not able to test on everything, and it's still felt that the formal education is a necessary requirement. The board exam tries to assess some degree of competency to protect the public, but it's not a replacement for formal education.
We have some Aborigines that don't have formal education, but could pass the test.
Okay. All right. The amendment has been moved. Is there objection? Okay, we will insert then an amendment to the committee substitute. Do you like to have the committee substitute back before us, or should we forward it to the next committee?
I would suggest. See, the doctors don't want them to be licensed. They don't want anybody else but them to be licensed. See how it goes down the...
Okay, is there a motion then to move the bill out of committee?
Why not?
Okay, any objection?
All right, Mill will be moved forward to the next committee of referral, which is the HESS committee. The question will follow with the title of the bill in regards to chiropractics, and then also the amendment that was passed by Senator Elias, and will follow the committee substitute to be inserted by the following committee. An act relating to dispensing occupation provides for an effective date. This measure extends the termination date of the dispensing opticians until 6/30/89, expands qualifications for that an applicant must meet prior to the examination and license. Is there anybody here to speak on behalf of this bill? Nancy? 603.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The division supports this bill. We support the continuation of the Board of Dispensing Opticians. The primary issue here is that if this board is allowed to sunset, the dispensing opticians have no ability to continue practicing professionally because there is a provision in the statutes for the optometrists. There is not a provision which protects the optician's right to practice, as there is in the optician's statute, a section which protects the right of the optometrist to practice. So if the optician's bill dies, they will no longer be able to provide professional services.
What's the difference, what's the difference between this bill and the one the governor vetoed last year?
Senator Ray, I don't know, since I wasn't here. I think the governor's intent in vetoing the bill was that he recognized that there needed to be some regulatory and statutory changes proposed, and that there was some conflict between the boards that he wanted worked out towards ultimately the combining of both boards, which is something that the division also supports, and we look to that happening when the sunset review for optometrists happens.
But you didn't do it there, did you?
I'm sorry?
You haven't done that. You
combined the boards.
Dispensing opticians. What about the optometrists?
Their sunset, their sunset review occurs in 1988. And the governor requested a task force of both optometrists and opticians to work together to look at the logistics of combining the board. They were essentially unable to come up with a piece of legislation to do that. And so essentially we're in the position of requesting that the Board of Opticians continue until such time as the sunset review for optometrists so the issues can be looked at in a combined fashion.
The reason that I, because I had a bill to combine them both last year, and that's one of the vetoed.
I see.
I don't know if I like this one at all. Had your name on it, that's why I vetoed it.
I don't know if I like this effort at all. Got a quorum? I'll let her go on.
Okay. Would it be better to have this board sunset in 1988 along with the other board?
The original intention was to do that. Representative Navarre changed the date to 1989. I'm unclear what the rationale is for that. I would think 88 would be perfectly sufficient because it would mean that they would be looked at in unison.
The original bill 88?
Pardon me?
The original bill 88?
Yes.
I move we put it back to 88. Yeah. He's good.
Okay, any further questions? Was there anyone else here to testify on behalf of the bill? Okay, we'll close the public hearing. We have the committee substitute for House Bill 603. Are there any amendments? Senator Ray?
Move it back to 1988 or forward, whichever Congress feels.
Okay. Any objection to the motion? Okay.
Move it out with individual recommendations.
Okay. Any objection?
As amended.
As amended?
As amended.
Okay. Hearing no objection, then committee substitute for House Bill 603 amended will be moved out of committee. Okay, committee substitute for House Bill 63. An act relating to the plumbing code and providing for an effective date. My office has spent a considerable amount of time. We've held hearings on this, and there is quite a bit of controversy. I have a committee substitute proposed, a Senate committee substitute for House Bill 63, which basically, if you look on page 2 of the bill, the original or the substitute bill or committee substitute that came over from the House on lines 6, 11, and 18 had described the type 5 non-rated building as the only one where the plastic or the ABS or PVC could be used, and this seemed to be a major controversy in the passage of that bill. And so I felt that probably the removal of the letter N would solve the problem, and I understand that it's going to create a series of more problems to that, so that this may not be the best committee substitute. I also put in a new section 3, which at the direction there, guidance of Senator Ray, section 3 was one there that raised the population figure from 2,500 to 5,000. Having this municipality falling under these guidelines would waive them from the certificate of fitness requirement by the state. And ironically, coincidentally, the 5,000 figure does not add or detract any of the communities that were under the 2,500 figure as in 1973. In other words, in 1973, when the 2,500 figure was used, we had a list of communities that fell into that category. When we raised it to 5,000, between that time, some of those communities fell out. But raising the figure to 5,000, we find that the same communities that were out in 73 are back out again. And I don't know if that appears to be creating a problem. Looks good to me. Section 4 was section there that Senator Ray was concerned about, requiring or putting the liability on the municipality that establishes standards that are not in compliance with what the state has adopted. Rather than have the liability fall back on the state, if the municipality allowed the construction to go on with and knowing that they were not in compliance with the state law, and the state came in to force the removal of the fixtures, that the state would not be held liable or responsible for any damages. The municipality would be liable. Okay, maybe we could address those comments there. I'd like to move rather quickly on this if we could. Any suggestions by the committee? Is there a motion to adopt the committee substitute?
I would adopt the committee substitute. Move it.
Okay. We have a motion to adopt the Senate committee substitute. Is there objection? Okay, hearing no objection. We have the Senate committee substitute before us. Is there a motion on the bill?
I would move the bill. It's about as good as you're going to get, and I don't know how you can address the responsibility. And it's impossible to have a situation where you have the state saying one thing, the municipality saying something else, and the poor property owner, he's caught in the middle. He does something. He puts in a fixture, or the plumber puts in the line, and it conforms to the borough. But then the state goes by and says, "Well, it doesn't conform to us. You have to take it out." And then he says to the municipality, "Well, you said it was okay." And he says, "Well, that's too bad. Can't have that." The state is a responsible party, or if they have the authority or they have the jurisdiction, then everybody else has to meet what their demands are. And if somebody, a lesser jurisdiction says it's okay to do something, then they're doing it. If they can get away with it, that's fine. But if they don't, then they are the ones that should be responsible, and not the individual who's caught in between two jurisdictions.
Seems simple to me.
Well, you know, I guess that argument can be made for any law we make, or any ordinance that's in conflict with it, whether it's building or whether it's liquor laws or anything else.
Same thing.
Same argument. So, you know.
It isn't just
the
because
point,
of
the point being is that if we're going to establish state right standards, the city of Juneau's going to have to comply,
yeah,
unless we change standards. So it's not
right.
Our fault that they've been doing these things.
That's right. But it isn't the individual's fault either. It gets caught in the hammer. He gets caught in between, and he doesn't know what to do.
Well, he's subject. Person or persons that put them betwixt and between our local governments, and they're responsible for the creating this problem. Well, I object to moving the bill today. I have no chance to do this. As a matter of fact, there are some substantial changes.
Okay, lacking three affirmative votes to move the bill from committee, the bill will remain in committee. And since we have done quite a bit of work on this, Senator Eliason, would you consider working this in a subcommittee and with any of the assistance of any of the other members or my staff there that wish to work on it? Could you, with the issue, could you try to get this back to us by Friday?
Friday.
I think that the committee substitute may have some problems with it, and if you would take a look at that and then see if we can work something out and get something back to us then. All right, Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 63, put into a subcommittee, as Senator Eliason, the chair of the committee. Committee Substitute for House Bill 494. An act relating to liens for labor or material furnished. This bill was sponsored by Representative Cotton. This measure seeks to strengthen and clarify the existing lien law and addresses problems being experienced by suppliers and subcontractors with receiving payment for labor materials furnished. At the direction of the sponsor of the bill, there were some changes that were offered, and as a result we've taken the liberty to put a committee substitute together and 494, and on page 3 on line 28 it says there is an insertion there of the owner. This was one addition here, line 28. Next time on these committee substitutes, mark the individual ones too. And then on pages 7, on subsection B, line 5, a claimant who gives, gives was inserted into the language. Line 6, promptly revoke is also inserted, and then on line 7, remove the is inserted, and then on line 11, the first word giving was inserted. These were the changes to the original bill. On page 8, lines 15 and 16, subsection 4, persons described as an AS 34350505 and prime contractors, comma, other than the general contractor, is new language that is inserted into this section. And I believe those were the only changes.
Is that correct?
All right. Representative Cotton is not here. We have his staff member. Would you come forward and identify yourself, please?
My name is Lisa Weisler, and I'm professional assistant to Representative Cotton. This bill that you see, it represents a compromise between the suppliers and subcontractors, lending institutions, and the builders. It's gone through a considerable amount of work, and basically now it does what it was intended to do, which was clarify and strengthen the existing lien law. Excuse me, lien law. If you'd like, I can either answer questions or I could go through the bill.
Okay, are there any general questions on the bill? Okay, maybe you could just very quickly address the changes.
Okay. First of all, on the stop lending notice, that formerly was a stop payment notice. It was a lender suggesting that be a stop lending notice. The major changes to that notice has been that the claimant can file a stop lending notice anytime after a payment is overdue.